Welcome to Cannabis Teen Talk. My name is Colton Turner, brought to you by Millennium Grown Broadcast Network. My name is Colton Turner. I am joined with my brother, Skylar, my parents, father, Tommy, mother, Wendy, and my sister, Riley. And right now, I guess we're just going to talk about my story. I use cannabis for my Crohn's disease, and I have been using it for a little over a year and a half now. I guess I'm just going to tell you a little bit about my whole story and how I wound up here. It all pretty much started when we were at a Boy Scout camp and I had drowned in a lake. I had swallowed enough lake water to have it called a dry drowning. Is that what it's called?
Yes, dry drowning.
A dry drowning. And the lake water that I drank kind of, my Crohn's was already active, but this just kind of kicked it into full speed.
Threw it into a flare mode.
Yeah. So I started to get a lot more sick. I was never getting any better. Yeah, a lot more sick. And eventually,
he's homeschooled.
Yeah, you homeschooled me. Luckily, I didn't go unconscious the whole time, and we didn't have to do anything. I just kind of just got out of the water. After that, it all kind of went downhill.
Yeah, pretty much what happened was he went out with a buddy. His name was Alex, and there was like what do you call it? I totally forgot.
Like a buoy rope.
Like a buoy rope.
Yeah. Well, he grabbed onto that thinking it would be tight, and he went under. So Alex started calling for help. Then another guy named Quentin came up. He couldn't pull him out either, so then they kept calling for help. And then me and another guy named Austin, we ran out there. Austin pulled him out. I grabbed him. We just took him to shore.
Yeah, you guys probably know more about the drowning than I do. All I saw was brown. That's all I, because the lake water's nasty.
It's a lake.
Yeah, right. But still.
So basically, you had gotten sick from the lake water, and you weren't getting any better, and we were spending months on top of months going back and forth to the doctor, trying to figure out why you weren't getting any better. You want to take it from there?
It was in late 2011, wasn't it?
June 3rd, 2011 is when you drowned, and then October 3rd of 2011 is when we finally got the 100%, well, the 75% diagnosis. When they said, we think that it's Crohn's, but we don't know. You weren't through, you know, all those months of testing before they actually said, this is what we think it is. And that just wasn't good enough for your dad and I. So we took you up to the Mayo Clinic. And on January 12th of 2012 is when we got the full diagnosis that, yes, it is completely 100% Crohn's disease.
After that, they started to give us medications like Azacol. I had to take like 9,000 pills a day, which I was better off taking Tylenol every single day because it just wasn't working. Then what was the next medication we went on to? Because there's just a million. I can barely remember some.
The next one was Indacort.
Indacort?
Yeah.
And that was...
There was one in between there, but I can't remember. I mean, you took it for like one day and it made you sick. So
it
the
was
next
a medicine that didn't work.
Yeah, it was a medicine that didn't work.
Yeah.
Then Indacort, and that one was the same as Azacol. Didn't really do much at all. That's when we started the Remicade.
That's when I got my medically induced RA and lupus.
Right.
From the Remicade that was supposed to help my Crohn's, but didn't do anything either. I developed medically induced rheumatoid arthritis and lupus.
And I'm not sure if the RA is actually
medically induced.
Yeah. RA symptoms type things. On your very first Remicade treatment, your infusion, you ended up with serum sickness. And serum sickness is when your body starts to make antibodies towards the medication that is supposed to be making antibodies towards your disease. So it was very counterproductive. And I don't know if you remember this, but we went back to the Ronald McDonald House and you were feeling pretty good after that first one. We were like, oh yeah, this is awesome. We're so happy. We finally found something that's going to work. And so we decided that we were going to celebrate and we took you out to the YMCA because they give us free memberships up there if you're a Ronald McDonald patient.
I don't remember this.
And yeah. And I didn't think you would. But we went to the swimming pool. Do you remember going to the swimming pool?
And like, it had like a, it had two separate pools, didn't it? One for like people who want to practice racing and everything, and then one that's connected to a water slide.
Yep. And
I remember now.
Yeah. So then at the water slide, you started getting really sick. And I thought you had had just gotten a colonoscopy the day before. And I thought, oh, geez, you know, this is something probably with the colonoscopy or, you know, something like that, because you started getting really, really sick and having a lot of pain. So we ended up calling the doctor really late that night because it was late by the time we got out of the got you back home to the Ronald McDonald House. And first thing Saturday morning, we were supposed to leave, but you ended up in the ER and they did another colonoscopy, or no, they did a CAT scan on you, and because they thought that they had perforated your colon, which is very common when it comes to colonoscopies, because their your colon is so, you know, friable and just so, you know, thin that those little things can happen. So your doctor was just a mess. I mean, he felt so bad. But when he when they went in there to do the CAT scan, and he stayed by your side from the moment that you got there to the moment that you left, he's amazing. He felt horrible, but they did the CAT scan and it came out that you didn't have a perforation, and that they had to start doing blood work, and the blood work wasn't going to come back for a while. So we went ahead and went home, and they found out after, you know, five more infusions, that you started making antibodies towards it, and we had to take you off of it after that.
So that was Remicade.
That was Remicade.
The story of Remicade. That's not the most complicated story you're going to hear today. And then after that, I went on methotrexate, right?
Yes.
And one shot of that, and I had nosebleeds for 15 minutes.
Oh, that was horrible.
Nonstop.
I thought for sure that you were just going to bleed to death, seriously, because it was just, you had it all over your shirt, and you had it all over the couch, and I thought your dad was going to kill me. But yeah, it was just everywhere. And then I finally got it to stop. And then like 10 minutes later, it starts back up again. And it just, you know, it was, we were having a hard time with it. So you had two massive nosebleeds that lasted about 15 minutes. And then you had just little bitty nosebleeds after that when it finally started calming down.
Oh.
But I called the doctor and they were like, no more, not at all. Never, ever, ever again. We took off that.
By the way, in case we didn't mention, I was around 11 or 12 at the time.
Yeah.
Forgot to mention that.
Yep.
And then after that, I went on Humira?
Nope. After that was prednisone.
Prednisone?
Mm-hmm.
Prednisone is what gave you that big moon face.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, you were all fat and chubby.
I was not fat and chubby.
Yeah, you were.
You looked so weird.
I was bloated and fluffy. I was not fat. I was fluffy.
You look like a little marshmallow.
You look like that guy in the well from The Walking Dead.
Well, that's kind of stretching it.
Oh, you looked funny. Well, you know, we never thought that you looked funny because we saw you every day. But looking back on pictures, we're like, oh my gosh, look at Colton. So we kind of laugh at you. Sorry.
Yeah, but yeah. The prednisone, It helped to the degree that you weren't in as a severe pain as you were. So we were grateful for the prednisone. But then, you know, if anyone's ever dealt with prednisone, you understand it's not a long-term solution to anything. And, you know, of course we mentioned the moon face, but it got to the point to where, you know, the doctors were concerned that if he stayed on it much longer, that we would have more health risks. In fact, Colton has an uncle who, during the same time frame that Colton was using prednisone, was also using prednisone himself.
He has ulcerative colitis.
Right. So they were both on the same, what do you call that, Wendy? Basically, they were doing the same...
Oh, the same taper.
Taper, yeah. They were doing the same taper. And his uncle is now medically retired from the Air Force due to the fact that the prednisone, from our understanding, had deteriorated both his hip bones. He's had one hip replacement, and he's due for the other hip to be replaced as well. So unfortunately he had to retire from the Air Force, and Colton at the same time developed a, I don't know if it's called a soft spot or just a hole in the heel of his foot. as well. So, you know, of course, we took him off the prednisone. And luckily, go ahead, take it from there, Colton.
Luckily, it's pretty much back to normal because it wasn't done growing yet.
Right.
So it kind of evened itself out. I've been working on diet and everything. It didn't work for me too much, but I did have to cut my entire diet in half on top of me being super picky. I'm on a completely fructose-free diet because the fructose messes with my Crohn's disease.
Shout out to Rainbow Chip. They need to make sure that it's no high fructose corn syrup so he can have it.
No kidding. Yeah. That was like the worst thing last night. We get to Walmart.
Eat the cake. Hey, Mom, thanks for poisoning me.
Yeah, we get to Walmart. We were like, oh, yeah, Rainbow Chip. And because it's the best frosting in the whole entire world. And Riley found it and she was all excited.
Yes, I was. It's the best icing in the whole entire universe.
And then we put it on the cake and Colton looks at it. And it has fructose.
But seriously, take it out of the Rainbow Chip.
No, but the very first thing, once they confirmed that Colton had Crohn's, the very first thing they did was test him for fructose malabsorption. And I forget the percentage, but it's a very high percentage of Crohn's patients have a fructose malabsorption.
88%.
Yeah, misnumbers over here. But with Crohn's disease, it's a very unique disease. Everyone's affected differently. Some people do really well on just a vegetable diet. Some people do well on a starch diet. It's just not one of those things to where it's a one size fits all, other than the fact that, you know, the fructose is a very important thing to take out of diet.
And since it's naturally in things like fruits or vegetables and everything, I can't have much fruits and vegetables. So I'm pretty much on a meat and starch diet. I can't really have anything else. Not only that, but I can't go to certain restaurants, like some of my favorite restaurants anymore because they hurt my stomach, and it's just a mess. So we're on the Humira.
Okay.
And we were on it for a while. It was the longest pharmaceutical I was on. It didn't entirely put my Crohn's into remission. When I got tested to see if I was in remission, the doctors kind of got the signs that I was in remission, but I kind of wasn't.
You didn't feel any different, did you?
I didn't feel any different at all. I was still in pain, always in the bathroom, tired. I still felt like that, but it did help me grow at least a little bit, didn't it?
Yeah, you were catching up a little bit.
Not much at all. Not much to be effective enough. In 2013, the summer of 2013, I went to the CCFA Camp Oasis Crohn's Camp, basically for a week.
Up in Wisconsin.
No, it was in Minnesota.
It's
Minnesota.
Crohn's and colitis.
Had pine trees.
Though, isn't it?
Oh, I was going to point that out.
Hold on. Oh, I thought forgot. Sorry.
I wasn't finished.
Welcome, sibling rivalry.
You have to deal with it.
It was formed by the CCFA, the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America. Basically, any child that has Crohn's or colitis, they can go to these camps and stay for a week and with all these other patients and kind of just bond and figure out everything together. It's a great thing. I went there and I had the most amazing week ever. I wish I can go again, but I'm not allowed. We'll get to that later on. But I came back and I had these giant, my lymph nodes were so swollen. They were the size of golf balls. Not even golf balls. How big were they?
They were pretty big.
They were about a golf ball. Yeah.
So we went to the hospital and they said it was a million one things. One person said tuberculosis.
Well, originally you were feeling bad. Your throat was sore, of course. And we went to the local hospital in our hometown and they thought he maybe had a case of pneumonia. He had a little bit of fluid on his lung, and they, of course, had to send their results to the Children's Hospital in the nearest city, which was in St. Louis. So they did that. We had to travel to St. Louis Children's Hospital, and as soon as we walked in the door, we were quarantined as if he had tuberculosis, and that's the approach they took with us for quite a while.
They did a bunch of testing and everything. Eventually, they decided that they were going to cut me open, take out the lymph node and figure out what exactly it was.
So basically, they did a biopsy on Friday the 13th of September.
I immediately didn't want to go.
Yeah, Colton's a little superstitious. But on Monday, the following Monday, when he received a phone call from the hospital, and it said that we needed to get back in while the scar was fresh and do another biopsy, because they did not take a lymph node, they took a salivary gland instead.
A salivary gland.
Your whole submandibular salivary gland.
Yeah.
Pretty much every single one of them on this side.
Well, no, you have three of them on that side, but they took your main one.
The main one.
Right.
The main one.
So I have a lot of problems with keeping my mouth dry.
Not dry.
Or not dry. And that plus a digestive disorder is not a very good combination. We went back up to the Mayo Clinic. We went testing and everything. Like, we got it tested and everything. And apparently there was like some, wasn't it some virus that was going on? And Skylar and Riley had it, but for me, it was just affecting me differently.
That's what we finally determined. But you're missing one more step. The reason why we went to the Mayo Clinic is because they thought that you had T-cell lymphoma. And that's the whole scare of the T-cell lymphoma was...
T-cell lymphoma scare.
Yeah. Was the reason why we began this journey. But, you know, it took us about a week or two to figure out if you actually did have T-cell. And T-cell is fatal. And so it comes from having Humira and having this disease.
If I did have T-cell lymphoma, I would have been a goner.
Yep.
So
I mean, yeah, and that's one of the things. And you know, I'd like to, you know, cut in here for 1 second. One of the things that it was really, really hard for me is that you weren't going to survive that, and that was difficult. And it's difficult for all those parents out there. You know, I know there's a lot of parents out there that have a child that has Crohn's disease, and they're looking at all these biologicals and they're looking at having surgeries done and, you know, just trying to figure out what's going on with their kid. It took us 3 months to decide that, okay, we're going to go ahead and go with the Humira, because I didn't want to do it.
Yeah. We should have listened to you, honestly.
Well, I mean, we didn't
know. That's retrospect, Colton.
Yeah. But I mean, thank the Lord we were smart enough to stop it when we did. You know, that it didn't get too far, that we kept on it, and that we understood your symptoms and you know, that we listened to our gut. Because every time I shot you with that shot, I think I cried harder than you did. It was hard.
Yeah, it was pretty hard, because each shot, it was just, it was too painful to describe. We had to do that like once every 2 weeks for a while. And that gave me the lymphoma scare. So we immediately went off of that. That was the last pharmaceutical that I was on. And after a while, I got into a wheelchair because I was just getting worse and worse. And we were put up with three options. One of them was to go on another biological called Cimzia. Now, Cimzia, it's kind of like the cousin of Humira, but if I were to have been on Remicade and Humira, and if I was a adolescent male, then I would have a 66% chance of developing T cell lymphoma. We weren't going to do that. That was the last thing we were going to do. The second option was we can have surgery. We can take the inflamed area out, and I'd have a bag on my side for the rest of my life. And that probably wouldn't have worked.
Oh, I mean, with all the complications of a surgery like that, considering that you were in growth failure, that was one of the things that we considered, is that you were going to have to grow.
Right.
And taking that inflammation out was great. But having that, not having that part of your colon where all of your nutrition is absorbed, then... That would have kept you at the size that you were, which was about the size of a 9-year-old, and you were 13.
I was shorter than her. I was
shorter than your sister.
Yeah, who is 2 years younger than I am.
Yeah.
So we weren't going to go with that. And now the third option, which is the one that we took, was alternative medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't really know what that meant. We kept asking questions, and they said, just check out what's going on in Colorado. So on March 4th of 2014, wait, when was the day that we had the colonoscopy? Yeah.
February 6th of 2014.
February 6th, we had a colonoscopy, and it was too many ulcers to count, 22 centimeters of inflamed bowel, and it was just awful. So March 4th, me and my dad left for Colorado. Mom, Riley, and Skylar all stayed in Illinois, where we were living at the time. And we came to Colorado with a suitcase full of clothes, and that was it. We had no idea where we were going to go, what we were going to do. When we first came out here, we were trying to get Charlotte's Web from the Realm of Caring. But the next time that I was going to be able to get medicine was in October or March of the next year. And I wouldn't have lasted that long. So we had to take matters into our own hands. My dad and I went to a dispensary and to get the cannabis. And we were living in hotels at the time, and luckily the roof of the pool was right outside our window, and we had no idea how we were going to take the medicine. So my dad decided to make brownies. So he's outside on the pool roof making brownies.
Can't deny it. That's what happened.
Oh, I agree. This is the fun part of the story.
I'm inside blocking the door with towels and everything. I'm spraying Febreze everywhere. It was fun. But eventually...
I wish we had a magical butter machine at the time. It would have been much easier.
Yeah. Magical butter machine.
So basically, in the state of Colorado, you have to see two physicians to be approved if you're a pediatric patient. Going to the first pediatric appointment, it was one of the most nervous times I could ever remember. I was more nervous doing this than dealing with drill sergeants in the military. So we went and saw the doctor the first time, and it was once I actually spoke with the doctor, it just relieved all my fears. And we had to go back for the second appointment about 4 days later. And while we were there, I saw a gentleman there that was also with his son, and he was there with his wife as well. And I could just see in the father's eyes the way I felt the very first time I was there. And so I just went straight to him and, you know, reached out and shook his hand and just tried to talk to him and just try to ease his worries. And oddly enough, the gentleman was from the St. Louis area, which we're 45 minutes north of St. Louis on the Illinois side originally. And the mother, the wife, his wife, was from, you know, just 15, 20 minutes down the road from where we actually live. And, you know, we struck up a friendship and we left that appointment, that second appointment. And 2 or 3 days later, we had a Facebook message from the gentleman's wife, and she had said that she ran into a gentleman named Jason Cranford and that he was making oil, and he was a great guy, and he was, you know, just all these great things. And
we know the truth. No, I'm kidding. We love Jason. He's downstairs waiting. Yeah.
But you know, we just heard this great information about this guy, and you know, I immediately got off I had telephoned her. She sent me the message, and then I phoned her and we talked about it. I immediately hung up with her and got a hold of him. And I know not so much pressed send. And I had a reply saying, you know, come on out, you know, and we did. And that was our first experience of actually having access to oil.
We all came out that day. It was around Easter. It was March 24th was the very first day that you got the oil. That's the day that we met Jason. And Grandpa was there, and we all came out to get the medicine with you. And March 25th was the first day that you actually took it. And it's been fantastic since then.
So we get the medicine from him. And we go back to the apartment where we were staying. And we decided to, it was an oil, little bottle of oil. And we decided to put them in little pill capsules. So we went to the nearest.
Why did we do that, Colton?
Because it tastes really bad. And I didn't look forward to eating any more brownies. We go to the pharmacy and we buy a bag full of capsules. And we just take the cap off, put the oil in, close the cap. And I take it breakfast, lunch, dinner before I go to bed just to keep up with time. And after a couple of days, the Crohn's pains were starting to go down. I had a lot more energy. I wasn't in the bathroom as much as I was. I was starting to grow a little bit. I was just starting to get a whole lot better.
Yeah, we kept track. Every day I'd make you weigh yourself. I don't know if you'd remember that, but every day you would weigh yourself. And I think it was every week I would make you measure. We would measure you to see, you know, your height. I know that's probably a little too much to do, but we just wanted to keep a good track of what was going on. And I would write down every single day everything you ate. That way I knew if, you know, there may be a food reaction that was making your stomach hurt. And, you know, of course, we mentioned earlier fructose, but we didn't have a great understanding. One of the only fruits we could ever get him to eat were apples, and apples have natural fructose in it. And that would explain why he would eat apples and he would have stomach pain. Go on, Colton. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's fine. Before we started the cannabis, it was always constant. From a scale of 1 to 10, it would be around a 3, 4, 5. And after a couple days of starting the cannabis, I would tell my dad, hey, my stomach hurts. And he would go, well, scale of 1 to 10. I'd tell him it's a 1. And he'd go, okay, tell me when it stops. And I'd say, it stopped right when I told you. It was that long. And we were immediately seeing a difference. After starting the cannabis for a couple of months, I was able to go to my very first Boy Scouts summer camp. Boy Scouts do have regular campouts that are like a weekend or something, but in the summer they have this camp that's a week long, and I was finally able to go to one for the very first time. And on one of the days, they had this thing to where you can wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning. And we all hike up a mountain to watch the sunrise. For you, maybe. For me, I was just sprinting up there. Like
I was
everybody.
Right next to you.
No, you weren't.
Yeah, I was.
No, you were not.
Can you tell they're brothers?
But
I was trying to look at Colton.
But like adults, kids, they're going to the side. They're exhausted, dropping like flies, and I'm just sprinting up there, and it was just the most amazing feeling that I've ever had because I was actually able to do it. Because I've never done it before. So after the summer camp and everything, in October, we decided to have another colonoscopy after finally finding a doctor that will take us because of the cannabis
use. Right, that was quite a feat.
Yeah, because a lot of doctors, not only did they say they wouldn't treat us, but they also threatened to call CPS on us. So that was pretty hard to find a doctor that won't do that.
Right, and that was quite surprising, you know, considering the fact that you think, okay, we're going to a legal state, you know, you would think that you would have a lot of support from the community as far as, you know, healthcare, but that was definitely not the case at first.
I ended up calling 8 different doctors and said, you know, hey, my name is Wendy Turner. I have a child that has Crohn's disease. And he is on cannabis. And I said, do you take cannabis children? And every single one of them said no until the last doctor. And of course, because that's the one we went with. And at that time, I was like devastated. I was like, what are we going to do? You've been out of doctor care for so many months. And we really needed to find somebody that could take care of you. So when I got onto this last guy, this last doctor, I just started crying. I was like, what am I supposed to do? And they're like, well, did you call this person? I was like, yes, I've called everyone. And I was just, you know, bawling my eyes out and just at a loss. And so the lady, the receptionist, got off the phone and said, give me a second. And about a minute later, she called me back and said that, you know, that your pediatrician has decided to take you. And that was so like relieving. And then when we went to, we called GI doctors too, not just pediatricians. And they all said no. And then we went to the doctor and he suggested a GI specialist. We were like, but she told us that she was going to call CPS on us. And so we were terrified.
That was scary.
That was scary. And then you had your colonoscopy with her.
So after we finally struck a deal and they decided to take us in, they did a little checkup and everything. And they said, pretty much just said, hey, okay, we'll see you in 6 months. And we go, no. We want a colonoscopy to see if anything is getting better. So in October, we have the colonoscopy. The results come back, and it's just clear. There's no ulcers, no inflammation at all. It's just completely clear, completely clean. Nothing wrong with it. And the doctor was shocked because they weren't pro-cannabis. And they were just like, it's clear. Like, they were surprised.
Yeah, keep in mind that in February, it was 22 centimeters of inflamed bowel, so many ulcers. You know, it was just a mess. His blood work was off the charts. And then nothing changed from that colonoscopy till the next colonoscopy, except for the fact that he started taking cannabis. It was just that simple. The diet didn't change. You know, there wasn't any sort of pharmaceutical medications or anything, just strictly cannabis. That's the only difference there was between both colonoscopies. So, you know, to have a colonoscopy that was clear, you know, and his blood work came back great. It was way more than we could have dreamt or even expected.
So, a long time after that, just recently, we had to go back to Illinois for about a week and I couldn't take my medicine. And the day before we came back, I had a little too much pizza.
Just a little bit. What, 12 slices?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Tell the listening audience, Colton, how many slices of Alfonso's pizza?
Best pizza ever.
And yeah, all of you Illinois people who are listening, you know how awesome Alfonso's is and how much cheese.
I have an addiction to Alfonso's cheese. Anyway.
The real answer is 9. 9 slices.
9. Now you're just giving me credit. So we come back and we were supposed to be doing an interview that day.
Come back to Colorado from Illinois.
Yeah, from Illinois, coming back. We were supposed to do an interview as soon as we got back. And then 2 days after that, I was supposed to go to Crohn's camp again in Colorado because I couldn't go to the Minnesota one. Well, I still can't because it's not legal there. So I'm getting this huge pain in my side, and I just couldn't take it anymore, so we just went to the hospital. And they admitted us, they checked us in, everything, blah, 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 blah.
Where was the hospital?
Memorial Hospital in Colorado Springs. This was the hospital that we went to. And they kicked us out because I was taking the cannabis. But if I had epilepsy, they would have kept me.
Right. They had just changed the rules. They at one time allowed anyone, and then they changed the rules to where they weren't allowing anyone whatsoever to use cannabis. And then they had once again decided that they would allow pediatric use of cannabis for seizures, which is great that they would allow that, but to limit it to just to one condition. Is why we are at this point in the story.
Also, I mean, that was in a critical day for us. So you'll see soon. We'll get to announce where you get to watch that whole situation because they were filming us that day.
Yeah.
So it's going to be on a major network. How Colton says, and at the hospital in Denver, that this is medical discrimination, and he was absolutely right. I looked at the sound guy and I was like, wow. That was pretty big words for you, which, you know, it's not really, but I was just really shocked that you understood the
gravity.
The gravity of that whole situation. because, you know, it is medical discrimination, and they, you know, what are we going to do when you break your arm? Say, or we, not that you're going
to
break your arm.
Well, if I do break my arm, we have to go 2 hours away, all the way to Aurora from Colorado Springs. That's the only place that'll take me.
Right. So, I mean, this is something that we need to address as a nation, and especially when we're working with these cannabis laws. And, you know, what hospital is going to take these kids? What hospital is going to take anybody that is taking cannabis at this moment that, you know, is in a legal state? You know, just because they're taking cannabis doesn't mean that they shouldn't have the quality health care that anybody else does. You know, it's very unfair. And that's something for you, Dean, for your political thing.
Medical discrimination.
Amen.
So
we have a couple questions for you,
Colt.
Or we have one. Go ahead and answer it.
Here, I'll read it.
Yeah, you go.
This comes from Melissa. She says, does Colton know how inspiring his story is for so many Crohn's patients, young and old? His story touches so many, and we are also grateful for his candor and humor during his journey.
Yes, what a good looking family. He is getting so big, I want to pinch his cute pink cheeks.
You couldn't leave that part out, huh?
I could not.
I don't think Melissa could either. You're so funny.
But I do know how much it's affecting everybody, and I'm hoping that it affects a lot of people and opens their eyes to the fact that this isn't the bad drug that everybody thinks it is. And it's going to help a lot of people, and there's really not much left I can say about that.
I just want to say one thing about that whole situation. I get Facebook messages on a daily basis that says, you know, how inspiring your story is, and what a great job that we've been doing. And thank you, everybody, that keeps us moving. Definitely. Let's let Skylar. I mean, I have one question for you, Skylar. You. This has been difficult for you. You're a teenager. You turned 16 while you're here in Colorado.
Yeah.
It's been a big change for you. To kind of tell everybody about what it's like being a sibling of somebody that takes cannabis for their medicine.
Yeah. What did you think when you first, you know, from the get go?
Well, pretty much. When we found out that it worked, we were like, okay, well, we got to move to Colorado, and I was like, all right. That's just something that we have to do. We can't really get around that, so we got to do it. So we're gonna do it.
But so, you were pretty upset when we did have to move because.
Well, yeah, everyone was. I mean, no one wanted to leave home. I mean, I had my scout troop there that I had to go back and forth from scout troop to scout troop from Illinois and Colorado just to get my eagle because I wanted to get eagle with them because I've gotten from scout all the way to Life Scout from there. So I wanted to go back for that. But, I mean, my best friend's there. My scout troop's there. Everyone I know is there. I don't really know anyone here. So, yeah, it kind of sucked moving. But, I mean, it was for the greater good.
What about you, Riley?
Well, the worst thing was I had to move away from my best friend. And that was really hard.
Give her a shout out.
Hi, Katie, if you're watching this, you're probably not watching this, but, you know, hi.
Anyway.
How did you feel about having to move out here? You know, was there any struggles? Was there benefits to moving out here?
There was definitely a benefit. I got to go to a different dance studio, and I learned so much more there. It was awesome.
But it was so tragic.
Sure.
It was a dark time. Ooh, that's a good question. If it was legal to go back to Illinois, would we? I would, honestly, I'd say no. I mean, there's really nothing to go back to. I mean, for me at least, I'm not talking about everybody. But for me, there's really nothing to go back to because from the get-go, I had pretty much already moved to Colorado. So I kind of didn't feel different about coming here permanently. And I'm pretty sure that I'm never going to go back.
I really don't want to go back. The only thing that I miss is Katie. Only if she can move out here.
Oh, you don't miss Grandma and Grandpa?
Oh, yes, I do. I miss them too. But I mean, like, well, if everybody else was out here, then my life would be complete.
Yeah, if everyone else was here, I think it'd be easier.
Would you move back to Illinois?
Would I move back? I don't know. I don't think I'd move back to Illinois unless there was something benefiting me. Like, if there was, like, a certain college or something that I'm going there for, you know, a future job or something. Because who knows, that could be in New Jersey in when I go to college.
New Jersey?
I just chose a place.
We're not going to New Jersey.
Yeah. And that's the thing. These guys are already...
Someone with New Jersey is watching this right now. They probably hate you.
Jersey is gorgeous, but you guys have Chris Christie. Yeah, there's just too much. So, you know, there's another political thing for you, Dean.
But I think in this frame or this time in our life with our kids, you know, Skylar's coming up on his 17th birthday, Colton his 16th, and Riley will be 14. She's not really looking forward to college yet, but the boys are looking forward to the fact that, you know, they're not going to be living with mom and dad too much longer. So I don't think for them Illinois is even an option unless there's something career-wise that would change. Even if the laws change, we need to make sure that we have the quality of medicine that Jason makes. It's I think the misconception that a lot of people have is that, you know, we simply just go buy a bag of weed from the guy down on the corner, you know, and that's not the case at all. We're getting a quality oil. And, I mean, it's a medicine. It's not just simply, you know, a drug that some stoner smokes on his couch while he's watching TV and eating Cheetos.
It's funny because you say I don't like looking for colleges. I have like my life completely planned out right now.
You do. And while I was saying that, I totally was wanting to say, never mind.
I know exactly what colleges I'm going to if I get in. So, yeah.
Well, I guess I'm the last one to say something about Illinois. Illinois has legalized medical cannabis for a numerous amount of people, but Colton's condition is not a qualifying condition in the state of Illinois. So we're still fighting that. Would I like to go home? Absolutely. You know, that's where our friends and family are. But do I like it here? Absolutely. I think my answer would probably be to that question, wherever Jason Cranford moves, he's stuck with me for the rest of his life and he's stuck with Colton. So I think that, you know, he's our saving grace. And I think that, you know, if he should move, then we'd probably follow him.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think he's moving anytime soon either.
All right. Time for another question by Melissa. For people who don't understand why CBD only laws are so detrimental, can you explain why THC is so important? Also, does Colton's dosing change as he grows?
Great question, Melissa. Mm-hmm.
She also has another question there.
Well, answer that one first.
Well, THC is important because it does certain things that CBD alone can't do, but CBD also does things that THC can't do alone. So when they come together, they work a lot better than when they're separate, and you can also help heal a lot more sicknesses like Crohn's disease or seizures. I mean, for some people, CBD only may work, but for a lot more people, THC is needed. Also, does Colton's dosing change as he grows? Does it? Because we really haven't changed it that much.
Not with Crohn's disease. We've noticed that it's in all the Crohn's patients that we've followed, it's more of a how many milligrams can you get into your system. And that it ranges differently for each person, but he has consistently taken about 50 milligrams of THC and 50 milligrams of CBD throughout the whole journey here. And there's one time where we did try to drop the CBD to drop the THC. I'm sorry. And he got sick and, right. You know, he was slower and he was tired more. And, we've definitely seen that you have to have the THC, and you know, at this point he's grown a ton and he's taller than me now, and he wasn't, and which is crazy.
And I think a common misconception about THC is you think, okay, you're giving your child THC that you're you know, regardless of the amount that they're taking, they're getting high as a kite. And that's just not the case. I mean, we give him as much as his body can take, or as much as his body needs, actually. I don't think I've ever seen him high.
Do I look high? I'm not high. And even if I did want to get high, I wouldn't be taking it in the form of an oil. I'd have Kate hook me up.
Kate. Shout out to Kate.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, it is. It's a misconception that people think that THC is you take a little or you take a lot, no matter what, it's going to get you blasted. And that's just not the case.
I love you, Kate. You're the best.
All right. Next question. Does Colton see himself working in the cannabis industry when he gets older? Well, I think I'm already working in the cannabis industry a little bit. I do see myself working in the cannabis industry, but I also kind of want to do things that I'd like to do as a hobby and also work in doing.
You're going to be working in the cannabis industry, but you just want kind of like a normal job, just like everyone else.
Well, not exactly a normal job. I want to do what I want to do, but I'd like to also be in the cannabis industry a little bit. So I'm going to try and do what I want to do. And that's just commentating on a bunch of stuff and just making videos on YouTube. And
I think I'm doing that a lot more than you right now.
Well, yeah, it's because I've been doing this.
Okay, guys.
But
I do have to say something here. At this moment in time, Colton can't get a driver's license. Well, he can get a driver's license. He is allowed to get a driver's license.
But
the nanogram limit in the state of Colorado is 0.5.
It's five. Not point. No point.
Yeah, it's just 5 nanograms, and he is at 25 nanograms. We did have his blood tested specifically for that, so we knew, you know, how much it would take. Or how much he had in a system, knowing that he's not high at all. But if he should get into a car accident,
like they hit me, and
yeah,
they swerved off of the road and they hit me, and I get tested, I'm going to be held responsible.
Right. So this is something that we need to change, especially in the medical community. A lot of us have kids that are taking a high amount of THC, and a lot of other patients that are adults are taking a high THC, and they're fine. They're not out stoned off their mind like everybody thinks that cannabis does to you. It just doesn't. And, you know, they're very capable of driving a car. And I think that that's just, you know, some more discrimination. This discrimination for a cannabis patient, it's not fair. Especially when I haven't heard of any car accidents that were cannabis related, but there's, you know, thousands of them every day that are alcohol related. So this is something that we really need to fix.
Yeah, I remember one time there was a news report on some person that crashed his car, and the first thing that they said was he had recently smoked marijuana because he tested positive for it. And they just go on about the problems that this person had and the car crash and everything. And then right at the very end, they go, oh, by the way, he also was under the influence of alcohol. So they went off this entire time making it sound like cannabis was bad, and then they throw alcohol at the end. It's ridiculous. I mean,
yeah, that's a little messed up.
But I mean, that's a great question, Melissa, because, you know, I mean, the fact that there's going to be a limited amount of jobs that he can actually get, because this is a forever thing. The cannabis use that he has to have is medicine. You know, this is a long-term forever thing. And, you know, say he wanted to work at Google, you know, could he? I don't know.
Could he work at McDonald's?
You know, and think about it. The transportation, right? Could he work at Walmart for a part-time job here in another year or two if he wanted? You know, it's just one of those things that, you know, he's capable. He's now actually capable of doing a job.
Yes, Corey, this is live.
Truthfully, I think we're all going to be working in the cannabis industry no matter what. Like, in one way or another, we're going to be working in it, I think.
Yeah, we're kind of sucked in. There's no way out of it.
Well, I don't think there's any better place for us to go. I mean, the experiences that you've been through, Colton, I think you're a very good spokesperson for what it's like to be a patient, as well as, you know, you have a perspective from a pediatrics point of view, you know, from a kid's point of view, and you're going to grow up going through this. You've got a very strong voice, and I think that, you know, you and, you know, Alexis and kids like you are going to change this world, and you're going to change these laws for the better. And, you know, I know that this is teen talk, but, you know, this is big stuff. And, you know, I don't know, now I'm just rambling.
We have another question.
Do you ever have to smoke cannabis for your symptoms? P.S. Keep Wendy away from the plants. No, I have never smoked cannabis to relieve my symptoms. We almost did. When we first came out here, because we had no idea what to do, but we decided to make brownies instead.
I did not want him to smoke cannabis at all. That I don't.
Not that it's bad or anything.
No, it's not bad at all. It's just that he's 14, and well, he was 14 at the time. He's 15 now, but I didn't like that stigma. Because to be honest with you, the stigma was still in our brains. The stigma, the propaganda, everything. We were taught through the DARE program, so you know everybody thinks that this is a bad drug, and you shouldn't be smoking joints and you know blunts and you know whatever. And you know, so I had that in my brain. But I will tell you this: if that was the only method that he could take to cure his Crohn's disease and make him back to a normal kid, I would do it in a second. I wouldn't care anymore, because it's not about taking a pill or taking a shot or smoking a joint. It's about health. And that's the most important thing to me, is making sure that my kid is healthy. So if he has to smoke a joint or vape or whatever, then that's what he has to do. So you know, this is a stigma that needs to kind of go away. I need to make sure that everybody knows that he's not that typical stoner kid that's smoking joints. But that stoner, it's like portrayed in the movies. That's not what it is. You know, I don't see people here in Colorado laid out on their couch all the time because they're smoking. To be honest with you, some of the most influential and important people in the cannabis industry are smokers. And they get more done than some of the people that I've seen that don't smoke cannabis. And so it's just the wrong thought for everybody to have, is that, you know, the stigma's got to go away.
All right. We have another question from Illegally Healed. You are now in school, correct? We are. Up until just recently, we did traditional homeschooling. And now we're a part of this homeschool group thing, where we pretty much just do all of our school online, and then 2 days a week we go to the actual school and do school from there. It's pretty cool, but it's difficult.
Yeah, it's pretty much just like a homeschool group thing.
Yeah. Basically, that you only go 2 days, but they send you homework.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a little hard because we're not used to everything, but yeah. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Hopefully I will see you next time. This is Colton Turner with my family, and I'll see you next time.
What up?
Bye.